Inseparable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
Well, welcome to all our admirable friends out there.
Yes, welcome. December 23rd, day before
Christmas Eve.
Well,
we should tell all our listeners out there. Maybe we shouldn't tell them. Maybe we should think that Alex will be coming later on, so they'll hang around and wait. We don't want to let the cat out of the bag and tell them that Alex isn't joining us tonight. So,
no.
They'll stop listening. They'll say, oh, those two.
Listen to those two old bags.
We've heard them before. So it's sort of like we're back at the beginning where it was when we all started, just the two of us.
Yes. But I love the topic tonight, though, Carol.
Well, it's on generosity, but I was just going to say that it was a generous act we gave Alex the night off.
Does that count as a gratitude? No. Counts as generosity, an act of generosity.
Yeah.
Yeah, he called us about 20 minutes before the show. I'm stuck. Now, he's got some family obligations tonight, and certainly...
We said, well, we'll just try to get through without you, Alex.
Yeah, we can try to make it.
So anyways, generosity tonight.
Generosity, and I don't know
really
how you
kind
feel.
Of, go ahead. It's kind of appropriate. I was mentioning tonight the next two. Tonight is on generosity, and the next week is on restraint. And it would be almost as if we planned it this way through the entire year that we would end this year on generosity right before Christmas, and then restraint right before the new year. So,
but they both let go qualities. They're both under the category of let go. And, you know, you clearly see restraint as letting go, right?
Yes.
But how is generosity letting go?
Well, generosity is the act of giving without expecting anything in return. So it's kind of like a casting your net outward.
Yeah. See, the way I look at it is letting go is because there's such a force pulling me to desire, right? It's like a forward lean I have pushing me for desire. And it's almost you have to lean against that force backwards. So I'm letting go of
the desire.
The desire that's pulling me.
Yeah.
But they both let go qualities, and you're right. One, right at Christmas time, generosity, a perfect time. And then right after the first of the year when we're all ready to restrain.
With our resolutions.
Yeah.
We're trying to...
Mostly around food.
Well... Mostly. But
isn't that what the exercises and the diet shows go good?
I think Weight Watchers will tell you that's when their biggest membership hits. So,
I got a bit of a sniffle. I hope I'm not bothering the guests. But generosity, I think this is the start. I think even though it's mind quality, I think number 7, I believe it's the start of the practice. I believe it's where... everyone must begin. And why do I say that? Is because I think the biggest cause of stress is runaway desire or runaway craving.
Mm-hmm.
And not that desire is bad. Of course, it's in all of us. It's the runaway element of it and the constant...
It's the unskillfulness of it that really gets us stressed out.
Yeah, but once we get to the choice of skillful versus unskillful... But it's that pull. It almost feels like it's You know, it's like waiting for the package before it arrives. You know, it's always a constant wanting mind, which is the number one cause of stress. And the Admirable Friends program is principally about stress reduction.
It is.
And on the road to reliable happiness, progressively, we should see less stress. But I think generosity is definitely the start. And I even think it's important for those that want to plow right into meditation or the journaling and contemplation should really start with generosity, because it's the antidote to all of that desire. But we're gonna go through it tonight, and like last week, we had some good comments on the format we went last week. Instead of going through the concepts initially, we went right into the practical side.
Right, and so we went on to the admirablefriends.org website where people sign in.
Right, but then we used to go to concepts, and then we go to practice. After we do the website and we go through the samples, I think we should go through what people have been generously writing in for us.
Well, we're going to go over their public contributions for acts of generosity and appreciations and gratitudes.
Well, let's go to the website. You're absolutely right. And under the category, generosity is three options. There's three choices under generosity. And it starts with Carol.
Well, we're going to, I guess, I'm not sure what you're asking me.
Well, there's three choices under the generosity menu.
Oh, right. There's acts of generosity, there's appreciations, and there's gratitudes.
Right. So let's go through the public display in the website.
We're going to start with acts of generosity.
Yes. And these are actual entries by our user group that have decided to share these with you all.
And they have to, when the members write in, they put down the action, and then they have to put it, whether it was a tangible or intangible act, and then the reflection on their action.
Correct.
So the first one was delivered breakfast to a busy person, and it was...
this is an act of generosity, you got?
Yes, act of generosity, and it was a tangible act. And the reflection on this action was it was easy to do and keeps the attitude positive.
Okay. I see one here. I like ran out to the store in the very early morning to pick up supplies for another. It was tangible. There wasn't any sense of obligation. And the reflection was, I want to spare them from dealing with the cold and rain as well as rush they would have been in, as well as the rush they would have been in.
That was a very,
very sweet,
thoughtful act.
Yeah.
This next one, which is kind of interesting because been there, done this one, dried the shower glass.
Okay.
And it was a tangible act with no sense of obligation. And the reflection on this action was, if it brings pleasure to someone else and causes no harm, so what if I don't think it is necessary?
Ran out in the pouring rain to pull the car to a better location. It was tangible. I didn't have any sense of obligation, the person says. And my wife was able to drive to work less wet, more comfortable. You know, this is so good to write this stuff down because, as we're going to talk later in the show, there's such a autopilot mode of, I don't want to say greediness, but there's always the what's in it for me or what am I trying to get? And you have to really work at this unconditional generosity, you know, really acts of generosity like this. And it helps to record them. I remember in our class Thursday night, we had some people actually say, well, they felt kind of funny writing this stuff down. Remember that?
Right. They felt it was boastful or bragging of things they did. But what we're trying to get to here is the repetition. Because once you repeat the acts of generosity, it becomes ingrained, like you say, the groove on a record.
Yeah. And I think, as we'll explain through the whole... maturation process when we were children, being served by our parents as dependent children, things were given to us and we learned to receive over and over and over again. And then they kind of taught us it's time to not get everything you want, and taught us some restraint. And then we'd go to the playground and we learned the concept of sharing. Right. So we're slowly giving up all of that kind of entitlement attitude. And that didn't come easy. Remember, sharing was a thing we had to go through. But we never got past the sharing to the other side where we would actually give as a matter of training. Some of us may have, through the church or religious practices, learned some of that true unconditional generosity, but it didn't come as a matter of habit.
No.
So here we are as adults, kind of realizing that all of this taking is causing us stress. And the antidote, the natural antidote, is to start giving. You know, and not that you run away from the economy of exchange, of trading, so to speak, which we all need to do commercially and at work. I mean, we can't just give everything away. There has to be a fair economy of exchange. But there has to be some level of practice whereby we start to give of ourselves, or else there'll be no relief from the stress. Because I don't know about you, but it doesn't seem like we're ever that satisfied with what we want while we keep wanting.
It seems empty at times, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. Well, it just seems like we turn it up and we don't realize we turn it up. You know, something as simple as, you know, going to the Starbucks and having the servant or the barista put in too much cream in your coffee, you see a face, you know. It's like, really? That upsets you that bad? But we don't realize this because we've been serviced, and a lot of the conveniences that have come our way and that we've demanded slowly over time have caused us to kind of up the ante onto what we consider satisfying. And as a result, the only antidote to that constant craving and desire is that we just take a moment and give of ourselves, whether it's small act of generosity, like you say, opening the door, or like this person said, getting the car so the wife won't in the rain. We actually have to train ourselves to do this.
We do. We do. I know I do. I do.
And you're a very kind person underneath, you know.
Well, we've spoken before that there are cultures that actually have generosity built in almost as, from very young age, the children are taught how to give of themselves.
Yeah, and interestingly, they're mostly deprived cultures, not as affluent as our cultures, if you trace them back. I mean, yeah, but go ahead, what you were saying.
Well, and say, for instance, in Thailand, as far as giving to monks, when they do their alms round, they realize that, you know, they might not have a whole lot, but they do give of themselves in a very generous way. And
train that way.
Yes. And then when the children become old enough, as far as teenagers go and adolescents, they take on that responsibility themselves because they've been taught from a very young age that that's a...
It becomes
an act.
Grooves in their records.
Yes.
And, you know, with all the opulence and conveniences we've been able to afford in our society, what happens is I call it the boiled frog syndrome, and I know people hate this because I posted it on the internet. I got very few likes. But, you know, when you put a boiled frog in a pot, a hot boiling
Not
pot.
A boiled, you put,
no,
a,
you
frog.
Put a frog in a pot. You're taught when you're cooking the frog to turn it up very slowly because it kind of bathes in the warm water.
Well, when you put it in the boiling water, it jumps out automatically.
Right.
So you put it in the kind of tepid water, and it just kind of lulls in there, and just kind of then the heat gets turned up very slowly,
and you get lulled into life. And I think that's to a large extent what's happened to us, because we've just kind of turned up the desire a little bit on the conveniences. I mean, last count, you sent me shopping, and I had to get some peanut butter, and I think there were like 20 choices of peanut butter.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Well, what's that all about?
Yeah.
Who created that demand for all that peanut butter, the different choices? So it was exhausting just making a choice on peanut butter. But, you know, somehow we behaved ourselves into those choices.
Right.
The suppliers didn't just offer it to us.
No, there was a demand there.
And we're co-conspirators in the deal. And if it's not that, it's, you know, all of the other choices. I mean, it's so obvious around food. I mean, do you remember the other day we were driving home from Austin and we were talking about how many food chains there were?
Well, we got, I don't even know what started it, but we were talking about how it started like a hamburger place and then how, you know, all these hamburger places developed or pizza parlors. It used to be just a, you know, like a family run little pizza place in your right. neighborhood. And now there's just chains all over the place and it goes from a one-off to a chain.
Okay, give me some more besides pizza. We've got hamburgers, you know.
Well, you've got you've got Mexican food. You've got Chinese food. You've
delis.
Got delis. Yes.
Asian
Italian food.
Yeah. Thai. You can go to Thai, all different kinds of Thai restaurants. You've got, obviously, seafood, right?
Well, whatever food
chilies,
there is, now
you've
there's
got your chilies,
now
you've got
there's
your
just everything.
So, I mean, 30 years ago, were there this many restaurants?
Not that
no
I can
way.
Remember.
No way. So not only have we demanded all of these nuances of different servings, we're also, in terms, that's just a qualitative choice, we're also, in terms of quantity, must be eating out more than we ever have. So again, what is that saying about the time we're at home, preparing a meal with our family and sitting down into some sort of normalcy, communicating mm-hmm. in the privacy of our home? We've lost that art. And you see, this is what I'm talking about, the boiled frog. It's like, what happened here? How'd this happen? And you never notice it.
No, until you turn around and you don't have it, and then you wonder where it went.
Yeah. So, you know, giving can be simply an act of let's give to ourselves and let's make a meal tonight. Let's go home and make a nutritional meal. Let's give ourselves a good home-cooked meal and let's have a good conversation and put the electronics down, you know, the phones next to us at the table. Because, you know, when you go to these restaurants, you see what's going on. I mean, even once in a while, if I pull out my iPhone, you give me the look.
Right. Absolutely.
When you look at the restaurants, are they all just kind of looking at their phones? They're not really talking.
No.
Right. So, you know, this is what we've behaved ourselves into. And that's why I say before we look to realize or even get on the path towards a reliable kind of internal happiness, we've got to learn to restrain ourselves one way or another in the best way. Because it's not like saying no. It's just saying yes to something different. Instead of saying yes to something I want, it's saying yes to something I'll give. And it does feel good when you do it.
It does. It really does.
But it's just not part of our behavior.
No.
You know? And it's something we have to formally introduce. And that's why it's so important to journal this way and to have the admirable friends that are doing it and talking about it.
It does reinforce the acts, for sure.
I mean, we are creatures of habit.
We are.
Let's go into some more of these appreciations.
Appreciations. So.
And of course, this is things that we appreciate about life. But again, anything that is having us stop and smell the roses is counter to wanting, wanting, wanting.
One of the public appreciations that was listed was the company of an 8-year-old on a walk through the park. That's great.
Yeah. The opportunity to be part of our family.
My partner's generosity.
Ah. That must have come from me. being able to get support from family and friends anytime with technology. Well, there's a good use of technology.
It is. The organizers and performers at the holiday show my son's school had last night. That's great.
Yeah, all stopping and smelling the roses. Okay, and our last category under generosity is gratitudes. And this is the case where we're actually, instead of doing something kind ourselves, we're recognizing the kind action of others, which is an inspiration to us in the future.
The first one I have on my list is offering me breakfast. I trust their intentions. I know they went out of their way. That was nice.
Okay. Handling the completion and faxing of some important forms. I trust their intentions. I know they went out of their way. It would have been highly inconvenient for me to get this task done. Being freed up from this activity allowed me to take care of other needs. That's nice. They recognize that. And they've learned from it. Hopefully they can do it, kind of play it forward.
Here's one. Took took one of my outstanding work action items to make progress while I'm out on vacation. Wow, that was pretty nice. I trust their intentions. I know that they went out of their way. Would have been easy to leave the matter until I returned or request I work some during holiday vacation. Well, that was really nice that someone did that so that they could free up their time for somebody else.
Took on more responsibility so that I could do something with my family. I trust their intentions. I know they went out of their way. Being a witness to selflessness is a beautiful thing.
That is so true.
It is true. Okay. So that covers all three areas under the generosity menu. You know, one thing I noticed in the public insights, Carol, I wanted to share. I thought this was an interesting insight. Under the understand menu, we have a thing called My Insights. And you never know sometimes who's posting. You don't know who's posting them. There's a public insight that says, scientists who used to associate the mind as a derivative of the brain are starting to now track how the mind actually creates and changes cells in the brain. The reflection on that insight is, perhaps now a greater emphasis will be placed upon a better understanding of our subjective inner experience. So what this person's saying is, and it's, I guess we've associated the brain and the mind to be one of the same thing. The physical brain is what our mind is. But now the subjective experience, let's take the subjective experience of generous acts.
Right.
And that happening in our mind is having a positive disposition on our brains. It's actually growing and triggering cells.
And the scientists are finding a quantitative way to
measure that.
To measure that.
So that's fascinating. So the opposite we know is true.
Well, do you think that people need that scientific
verification?
Yes.
Yeah, I do. I really do.
In order to really say, well, okay, then it really must be good for me.
Well, I think being Westerners, we're principally more concerned with the scientific way of thinking. Outside of our religious background and faith in God or Jesus or, you know, Allah or whatever our faith is, on the subjective side, we're pretty much as Westerners interested in the outer world of what exists in the scientific method of this and that. And the brain has always been associated with the mind. And I think when we all of a sudden see that our pure experience, our inner experience of how we respond to our actions and the way we act as a subjective experience of the mind, which can't be measured, is having this objective, measurable effect on the brain.
Right. So it's almost like where exercise and endorphins were years ago, right? I mean, when scientists said, oh, when you run, you create the these endorphins that make you feel happy and, you know, you get that runner's high or that...
Yeah, but that would be the other way around.
But
that's kind of the reverse.
But now scientists are saying once you do something very generous, your brain is responding in a way that was never measured before.
Yeah, it's triggering growth and health, less stress. People are responding better to cancer treatment, who have better attitudes. You know, when I went to our oncologist, who was extremely scientific, I remember the story when I said to him, what do you think the role the diet plays on cancer treatment? And he said, well, the studies are all over the place. He was a very scientific kind of guy and said, the studies are everywhere.
I remember him saying that, and I was quite disappointed when I heard him say that.
Right. But then I said, okay, what role do you think the mind plays? And he looks at me and he goes, absolutely plays a role. And I went, excuse me. I said, something at least measurable like food, you're telling me has no effect on cancer, but something subjective like the mind? I said, where's your data, Mr. Scientist? And he looked me right in the eye. He says, I have the data. He said, I've been in this business for 40 years, and those who have good attitudes live, and those who don't die.
There you go.
You know, quite an impressionable? Yeah. It was just mind-boggling when he said that. But he had the data. It was, again, the subjective experience of people being happy.
Or frame of mind.
Yeah. living longer and responding well to cancer treatment, remission in cancer, part of the subjective experience. So some of these things, I think older wise people have always known this, but it, like you say, it has to be proven up. And we got to get the probes on the brain and see all the new neurons that are fired up as a result of this subjective experience. And it started with the scientists or the neuroscientists putting the wet nodes on the
electrodes on the monks.
On the monks that showed extraordinary aspects of the brain that were, I guess it was in the frontal lobe, that was growing and large, thick portions of the brain.
Right, the frontal lobe. They were firing up all the neurons and everything, they were saying. So, you know, I was thinking earlier, too, about generosity and how it frees you up. Because when you're giving and you're outwardly giving with not expecting anything in return, it really gives you a chance to observe empathetic joy.
Ah.
Because when you stop and think about the exchange, if you're giving something and you're expecting the exchange, you're already creating the narrative that you've stopped even looking at the recipient and how they're experiencing their gift.
Oh, that's really interesting.
And so when you're generous and you're giving to somebody else, if you're not expecting anything in return, it opens you up to look at them and see how their joy and their experience really...
You show up for their response.
Up
for their response.
And so you can enjoy their happiness. So I think it's another Benny that you get from generosity that we might tend to overlook.
Yeah.
You know, you can see it all unfold.
I think it's a real great insight on your part to notice that other derivative benefit of doing that. But like I said, each act increases the likelihood of us acting again that way. So therefore, each time that we take, we're more likely to take more in the future. Each time we give a little bit, we're more likely to give a little bit in the future. So that's why this process of beginning the path towards a generous kind of living is not huge leaps and bounds. They're little singles that you hit.
Mm-hmm.
No need for home runs. No need to go save the whales up in Alaska. You know, you just need to pay attention to whether you're giving, like you say, with something in return. And there's plenty of room for that. We're not going to walk away from the economy of exchange. I mean, this is the way the economy works. So we trade all the time. And it's nothing wrong with it. It's just that it's become the de facto standard. You can't trade with your kids. You can't trade with your wife. This doesn't work over the long haul. You know, you just got to give and enjoy the process and do it again and do it again and do it again. And it becomes part of our habit. And it causes less thinking. Like you just gave that example. Let's just slow this machine down a little bit. I'm giving you something, and I'm hoping something in return. So I'm giving you something. There's a conversation going in my
Absolutely.
Head.
Absolutely. There's a whole narrative.
Right. And that's what you said. I'm not there. I'm not showing up to actually respond and let my senses work on full throttle to see how you're responding. Well, you know, that happens in our mind because the actual... thinking process can go unchecked. When you keep craving for things, you're just firing up your thinking mind. And I guess they show that it uses like 80% of the energy in your body. So not only are you not there with all your senses to see what's going on, it's kind of like when you start talking.
Well, it sounds exhausting. Listening. If you're using 80%, it's exhausting your system.
Right. It's a thinking brain that's doing it. Again, they can measure this. They've measured it. And they know how much. So the question is how do you stop thinking? Well, just stopping thinking is an act of thinking. That doesn't work. So what you have to really do is kind of redirect that desire or delay that desire. And if you're desirous because of past experience and past memory of somebody with a warm smile after you give them something, now your desire is turned differently. You're sitting there waiting for that warm smile. I guess that could be considered a trade, but
But I think stopping it, just opening that aperture wider so that you get a bigger picture of what's actually going on and it's being presented in front of you.
And again, what makes us open, our senses are open, is we're not shut down. That thinking mind shuts all the other senses down. Okay, if you're really thinking about something, that's why you drive past the Walmart and don't even know you drove past. Okay, is
that's
because you're thinking about
part,
something.
Sure.
Your eyes haven't, you're not aware, conscious of what you're looking at.
Engaged.
Yeah.
In what you're doing.
Yeah. The eye is taking on an object and is not even aware of what it's taken on. Or the ear is listening without an ear listening, without consciousness of that awareness. So you've left that sense door essentially shut, and you've clogged the whole system of living through all your senses, through that thinking mind that's just usurped everything.
And I know you say, I love this word, but the wonderment of it all. You miss the whole wonderment of it.
That's
and
right.
That's where the empathetic joy, you know, to enjoy somebody else's happiness.
So before we get into the letters that were so generously written in, let's take a break. We're at that halfway point, and we'll be back in a moment.
Okay.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
And we're back.
And we're back on the night of generosity, day before Christmas Eve. And what we're about to do is go through the letters that were written in, and I just want to preface those letters with what we asked of our admirable friends. Those of us who are on the mailing list, and by the way, to get on the mailing list, just go to admirablefriends.org and send us a note, or send it to hello@admirablefriends.org and request to get on our mailing list. But what we do is we set out a blast a week in advance, and we say we want to hear from you. We're talking about generosity, and the subject is greed and generosity, as we always kind of bring up the opposing actually
quality.
Not quality,
well,
but kind
the,
of a,
so the vice.
The vice side of it.
Go ahead, I said it. Vice.
Vice, yeah. Please share your thoughts on what kind of consequences flow from acting generously was the first question we asked. And the second one is, what happens when you make a decision from a position of greed? Carol, why don't you start off with what you got?
Well, I've got a lovely email that says, starts out, dear admirable friends, if any of your listeners would like to try true generosity, please give volunteering a chance. The pleasure you receive from giving of yourself is far greater than any monetary contribution you may choose to give. Many years ago, I tried volunteering in a nursing home, not realizing how my generosity would give me more pleasure than I had given. This generosity made me feel so good that I stayed for 20 years. I am now 89 years of age and still miss how good being generous makes you feel, that I am now volunteering at a local food bank. The moral of the story is that generosity is the greatest gift you can give and receive more in return.
Wow.
So, I think that's wonderful. But what's, you know how we always say that acts tend to be done when you're seeking pleasure. It has to be pleasurable.
Yes.
So obviously this is a true testament. For 20 years, this person volunteered, and it certainly never got old. And they derived a tremendous benefit, clearly, because they just kept doing it.
Yeah, in fact, they said it exceeds any other pleasure in their life here, is what they've said. Right?
That's a wonderful,
give me
wonderful
more pleasure.
Letter.
Yeah. And only that, if I'm reading it correctly, this 89-year-old person is still volunteering at the local food bank.
Correct.
This is fantastic. Boy, so our audience, quite a range, huh? I know we've got a 12-year-old listening to us who's sharp as a tack, and now we've got an 89-year-old that's just as sharp.
So you have a lot of wisdom in our admirable friends group. So, yeah. And it's nice to get an email like this.
The writer also has a question at the end saying, my question...
Well, I was going to... Do you want to wait till after?
No, go ahead.
Can we come back?
Go ahead.
Well, the question that the writer had asked at the end was, my question to admirable friends is, how does goodwill differ from generosity?
So. Good question. First of all, goodwill is an act of generosity, but it's really generosity is the big umbrella term. Goodwill is a very specific act of generosity, and it's directed towards others, towards ourselves and others. And it's wishing them to be reliably happy by finding and act upon the causes of reliable happiness or of happiness. So you're actually saying it's more than opening a door. You know, it's very defined, not more, but different. You know, an act of generosity is a broad category. Yeah, more specific. But you're actually wishing, and they're thoughts, so they're not physical. Goodwill is not a physical act, like an act of compassion. It's matters of thinking that you direct, it's almost like prayer, that you direct towards yourself and others to truly be reliably happy. So it's an act of generosity. But like you say, it's a specific act of generosity. Let me take one here, Carol, if you don't mind.
I don't. Go right ahead.
This is one that I really liked. What kind of consequences flow from acting generously? One consequence for me is calmness. It feels good to help someone, particularly with no strings attached, and realize that you may have made a difference in someone's day or in bigger instances impacted a life. Whenever I am generous with someone and carry an expectation of something in return, well, that pretty much results in the same experience as when I act from a place of greed. So they're actually saying the trade, this is a very mature person here, because they're saying that the trade is almost like a greedy act, a selfish act. They like generous acts, unconditional acts so much that it trumps both. A trade as well as a greedy act. To me, a greedy act is wanting it just one way. That's leaving nothing on the table for the other person. A trade would be, you know, looking for the win-win, and a generous act under the new form of generosity that we're trying to kind of stimulate would be, here it is, no conditions.
Correct.
It's for you, and it's a gift, strictly gift. What happens when you make a decision from a position of greed? The writer comments, I often experience isolation. I guess it's natural to have a loss of connectedness to those around you when your actions are self-serving. Part of that is because it often comes at the expense of others in some fashion. My mind is not at ease because I am rationalizing why I needed X at the expense of those around me.
This is so wise.
Yeah.
But it perfectly illustrates what we're talking about as far as stress, and stress equals greed.
Mm. It's the cause.
Or greed equals stress, I should say. And then
it's the
calmness that you feel when you give without any strings attached.
And like I said, I don't think you ask somebody on the street, if you're sitting out there with a candid camera and say, are you a greedy person? I bet you 9 out of 10 people would say no. Like I said, it's the boiled frog. We don't realize that we're acting from a position of greed because it's come upon us over the years. We just never grew up in a society.
We're really desensitized to it.
Yeah, we are. It's like I said, would you consider being greedy because you want your coffee a certain way? No. You don't think it's greedy, but it is. Because 2 years ago, you didn't even have the coffee that way. It wasn't even a convenience that you had, and you were happy. Right, so you just kind of we have behaved ourselves into this desire, and it just keeps upping the ante. It's almost like, you know, the records. How you often think, well, if they high jump 5'6" and they go to 5'8", when are they going to stop? Are they going to leap over clouds someday?
Everybody's, you know, it's almost like a personal best breaking that,
yeah,
that record.
But it's funny that wants go that way for human beings without unchecked.
Well, that's true. I mean, the more you want, the more you get.
The more you want more.
Yeah, exactly. It's a
we're built that
vicious
way.
Cycle, for
yeah.
sure.
We're built that way, or we're trained that way. So there's an element of greed that exists within us. And, you know, I know you say don't use that word so much, you know, because let's try to temper it down and say excess wants. But sometimes it's necessary to bring attention to where the real problem lies. And working in the stress-based area for about 15 years right now with clients, it's all down to wants and expectations. I know wants are, you know, not wants, but in particular likes. I like it this way and I want it this way. And not only that, those likes that aren't getting us what we want are what's taking up the time in our day. So if you're ever going to free it up into the areas of leverage where you want your life to transform, you're going to have to stop wanting. You know, so it's much harder just saying no. Restraint works too, okay? But if you can learn to take that desire and make it pleasurable on a more skillful want, you know, a more skillful want, by definition, something that's skillful is something that leads us to a better destination, meaning reliable happiness. So when we act out of generosity, we're going towards reliable happiness. When we act out of greed, we're going towards stress.
That's correct.
It's a simple why in the road. And 99.9% of the time, we're acting out of greed. And it's not hard when we all admit it. It's just understanding that this is the way we've been conditioned.
No. And we go back to when we say it's a lot easier when you surround yourself with admirable friends that align themselves with the same goals and desires as far as, you know, living a more generous or reliably happy life. Because when we talk about cultures that have ingrained in their people the generous nature and things like that, and like you say, it's usually the countries that don't have that much, certainly comparatively to what we have here.
They're not as developed.
So they appreciate the much more subtle and finer points of humanity and life and generosity. I think I recall that when you and AJ were down in Bolivia.
AJ being our oldest son.
Yes. You said that people invited you in. They had no idea who you were.
No. And they served us meals. We were visiting, and he was playing soccer for the, you know, U.S. youth team. And it was an amazing experience that people we didn't even know served us meals. And, you know, it was just their culture. And I said, well, how can I repay these? No, just, and they had happy faces on. We barely had the language. I mean, they barely had running water. We were in homes in the mountains, Carol, where there wasn't any flooring. Yet they were serving us food.
They were generous and grateful to be in your company.
That's correct. And again, it's nothing but learned behavior. And the challenge for us in our society is to do these things and to begin changing our behavior. And it takes a group to really want to do this. And, you know, I learned the hard way through greed. I'll admit it. I mean, it caused me a lot of stress in my life and health problems as a result of it. And, you know, the natural antidote is just turn around and start giving of yourself. And that only comes a little bit at a time. You just can't go out and make it all up on one trip with the youth or with the church to go give to Katrina. Mm-hmm. It's not good enough. It's the little acts that keep building and building and building until you, it's kind of like a Pavlovian dog that gets used to salivating when they hear the bell. You know, over time, you just condition yourself that this is the way you operate. And next thing is, you go out each day and you're much nicer to clerks as you see them. You appreciate other things.
Right. They don't have to be over the top generous. I mean, when you think of somebody that's generous, you think of somebody that's more philanthropic, that has, you know, foundations that give money to people, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't have to be something as over the top and tangible as that.
Correct.
It could be a kind word.
Well, let's go through those six forms.
Okay. I think that's a good time
I'll tell you what. Let's play a game. I'll give you the words and you give some examples. Okay?
Oh, you got to put me on the spot.
Justice. Oh, come on, Carol. You do this for a living. You're the nicest person I know.
Go ahead.
Justice or treating people fairly?
Suggested forms of giving under the
number state. One, justice or treating people fairly. Give me an example of that. That ought to come easy for you.
Well, I think when kids, you know, when you have a treat, you give one to everybody. You know, it's just everybody gets one. And if you don't have enough, you break it in half. So, you know, when the kids were younger, it's like, well, so-and-so, we only have one. We'll break it in half and give it to somebody else.
There you go.
You know, that's fair. So
the what about if you were a parent, go ahead and take the biggest piece? It's not going to work, right? Okay. Safety or non-harming, the gift of safety.
Gift of safety. Well, I mean, buckling up or making sure everybody's buckled in your car. How about that?
Yeah. Well, I know one that I do. I have a precept of non-killing as part of my religion. And I'm providing safety to people by not killing them, and human beings, and animals and insects. That's a gift of safety. Helpfulness.
Well, helpfulness, I mean, that could be like taking someone's groceries up the stairs or opening a door or just a general act, I would think.
Right.
Or doing dishes, you know, when you're doing a dish for somebody.
Very simple.
Very simple.
Gift of knowledge. Boy, I saw you with our grandson just playing with Legos the other day. Right? You're showing them how the wheels get organized and, you know. Another example, gift of knowledge is...
Well, if you knew how to get somewhere, how about if you... Directions.
Yeah.
You know, if you've gone somewhere before and somebody says, well, I'm going to Austin, and you say, well, you know what? I just went down there and I found that going this route, you know.
There you go.
So, I mean, these are really very simple little things that cost nothing.
Right.
That are very helpful, yet we seem to minimize them or poo-poo them because we think they're not just these over-the-top, grandiose kind of acts.
That's, again, we're looking for the instant gratification. We're
looking for the home run instead of the base hit.
And that's just more greed. See, we're greedy looking for an answer to satisfying matters of the heart. Which we know our heart feels warm when we give, so we're looking for a home run to say, well, we've got to make up for all this taking we did all day long, so let me go to Katrina and save the whale.
Yeah, but all it needs to be is a slow burn. We don't need the big fire.
That's what I'm saying.
Right?
But that's what conditions you, because how many trips to Katrina can you make? You have to condition your behavior. You have to change your behavior, little bit at a time. That's how the little bit happened. The little greeds became the ridiculous peanut butter jar example. It wasn't all of a sudden we went from 1 to 26 different versions.
Hmm.
It went from 1 to 2. I'd like a little crunchy. Well, wait a minute. I'd like a little bit of jam mixed in with my peanut butter. But wait a minute. I want not super crunchy, right? A little bit crunchy. That's how it all happens. It doesn't happen all at once. So how could it go the other way without doing it small? Forgiveness, the gift of forgiveness, number five.
Well, I look at the gift of forgiveness as something that's a very generous act to the person, the self, giving it to yourself. Because we often laugh about it, but it's like, what do they say? Holding a grudge is like taking poison and hoping the other, you take the poison and you hope the other person dies. You know, it just, it has no, it's crazy.
Yeah, I like how you're relating it to yourself, because usually if you're forgiving somebody else, they don't even know that you've got a grudge on them anyways.
Correct.
So the forgiveness is really a boomerang gift.
Well, it is, because it frees you up. It really does kind of say...
Let go.
Yeah.
Thoughts of kindness towards others and what is termed goodwill.
Yeah, right, here's the goodwill. The thoughts of kindness towards us or others that they find the path to reliable happiness and...
Yeah. Not that they wake up and ba-boom, they're in reliable happiness. That they find out the little acts that take them to reliable happiness. Like listening to what we're talking about right now. This is the road to reliable happiness. And like I said, I believe this is the start of the road. Generosity is the start of the road. I believe if you go and trace the New Testament, and I think if you go read the Pali Canon, which is the a New Testament version of Buddha's life on earth, I think you'll find that both of those famous preachers, realized men, were extremely generous in their actions. They demonstrated generosity in everything they did. There's a a historian on the Buddha side that says that he never did a sermon without speaking of generosity first. So they've actually extrapolated that no matter where he spoke, it was always generosity that started the process.
Well, he obviously thought it was the most important thing then.
I mean, I think he realized that the number one draw that's pulling us is desire. And unchecked or unskillful, it just is like a runaway train. And so we've got to counteract that right away. So, I think it's really, really fundamental. So that covers it. Do you want to cover one more letter? One more email, Carol?
Do I have one more?
I thought you had one more.
Let's see. I do. Okay.
I know you have a couple.
This one was said, the subject was my take on questions posed to for today. Consequences that flow from generosity typically results in an emotional kick and lightness of heart. However, I find that this is only the case with true generosity. This kind of mirrors what we just read from the other one about the calmness that the other person receives when they are generous in spirit. This writer says, sometimes I do something I feel is generous, but may be subject to the exchange of the results can be both good and bad. Point being that there's often a bad consequence we can perceive as related to our generosity, but not sure it really held up to the definition in the first place. When I make a decision from a position of greed, I don't notice it until I have felt the negative stress associated with it. And when I stress, I then can go backwards and see the greed from a different point of view. When I do see greed as it is happening, it is usually on the backdrop of having expressed some generosity somewhat recently and become very aware of the response to act greedy and what it can do.
Wow. I really like this practitioner. They're one of my favorites. I don't know who they are, or I do, but my point is they mentioned greed 5 or 6 times, and it's like this is a real practitioner. They're calling it like it is. They're seeing it. Watching for greed during the day, catching them, letting go of it, cultivating acts of generosity. And again, just like watching greed and feeling the stress associated with it, stop and realize when
associated.
You have a generosity. Yes, that association.
That's what I was just going to say. I was just going to point out the line that said, when I stress, I can then go backwards and see the greed from a different point of view. So they associate the stress with an opposing vice. And
a feeling and a sensation.
Yes, and so associating the greed as in rear view and trying to dissect it at that point.
Right. And again, it's not just the act itself that's greedy. The derivative problem associated with these acts is they're more likely to occur again in the future. You know, your future is being created by your actions now because of memory. So what you do now is more likely, in terms of thoughts and actions and intentions, is more likely to happen again. So it's even thinking greedy is more likely to be thinking greedy again and more likely to act greedy again. It's that power of intention that keeps propelling us forward, that momentum of desire. So you have to interrupt that momentum and start to feel the other form of generosity. And just like that person notices greed, notice the feeling in the heart, the warm feeling when you give. Stop and smell it. You know, my meditation coach will say, you know, when you find yourself losing your breath and you're out there thinking a lot, when you come back to your breath, make that next breath a really big, comfortable breath.
Because you're more inclined to come back to it again if it's pleasurable.
Yeah, like a big warm hug. Hello.
I'm glad you said hug, because I wanted to stress, too, that the generous, when we talk generosity, we're also talking about the right speech, generous words, as far as kind words or helpful words.
Well, it's
and also
truthful, timely, and beneficial.
Correct. And then we're also talking about sometimes words don't even have to be said, and the act doesn't have to be over the top. It could be a nonverbal cue,
smile.
Like just a knowing look. A smile, eye contact, a hug for no apparent reason whatsoever, just like I felt like giving you a hug.
Yeah. In fact, I was just telling my haircutter that today. I said, when you're greeted in Africa, do you know in some parts of Africa what they say to you? She goes, no. And I said, they say, I see you. You know,
just, it's a validation. I mean, people want to be validated like that. That they're not just, you know, busy ants going through life.
And our youngest son was up in Washington, D.C., visiting the Capitol and touring the White House. And I said, pay attention to the underground when you're up there. I said, notice how the people don't make any eye contact. And he did. You know, it's amazing. It's like there's no eye contact. You just get in that subway and you just go down.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, how about when you're in like a, when you're walking on the sidewalk and you say hello to somebody, or you might be in a new town or something, you know, good morning, good afternoon. And they'll say, you're not from around here, are you?
Yeah.
Kind of thing, you know. It's like, why? So it's interesting. But before, you know, time runs out, I just wanted to take a moment to thank everybody that tunes in and listens to us. And to
either say, live or on podcast.
Yes, and to say that it's a truly generous gift that you're giving us by tuning in and listening and being
you give
a part
us,
of
it. You give us hope.
Well, it's just, it doesn't go unnoticed, and we really appreciate that gift. So, especially during the holiday seasons, I think I can speak for both of us when I say we wish everybody a peaceful and somewhat stress, diminished stress. I can't say stress-free. There's always...
That problem with wanting too much and wanting to be so kind has got us running around getting that extra gift. But, you know, stop this Christmas. And those
take inventory of who's around. And
and for sure, those of you that are Christians enjoy what the holiday is about. What it means to you. And
those celebrating Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or whatever anybody celebrates during this holiday season, just take a moment to connect with it and enjoy their families.
And those of you that aren't religious, it'll just be Festivus for the rest of us.
You're crazy.
All right. It's time to say goodbye. And I go along with you, Carol. I very much appreciate all of you this Christmas year. And I guess, is next week?
We're going to be.
It's not New Year, though. It's not New Year.
No, it's not. It's the last Tuesday of the year.
Oh, my.
So it's going to be a big one.
Yes, it's getting ready for the new year. We're kicking it off, and I think we'll be somewhere between here and Florida. Are we going on vacation?
We're
going
to go see Mom.
So we'll be probably broadcasting remotely. We'll bring the laptop with us. But we wish you all the best from the deepest part of our hearts.
Yes.
And appreciate tonight's show.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Take care.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.